we get started tonight with our first guest, Tim Donaghy. He's a senior research specialist with the group Greenpeace USA. We're talking about some real concerning developments in the Trump administration with regard to dismantling the Obama-era regulations on climate change and many other associated regulations. Tim, thank you so much for making time to come on our program tonight.
Thanks, Scott, for having me on.
As we start, just say a quick word, if you would, about Greenpeace USA and the work that you do there.
Yeah, so Greenpeace USA, we are one of the environmental groups in, across the world, not just in the United States, but we work to mobilize folks to fight for a world that's greener and more peaceful, I guess is the basic way to put it. And we do a lot of creative actions, creative protests, and other means of drawing attention to some of the problems and mobilizing people to try to work solutions.
Thank you for that. And we'll give out the web address certainly during the course of this interview. So we invite you here to talk about the very disturbing actions taken by Donald Trump, not surprising given his campaign rhetoric, saying he was a climate denier, basically saying climate change was a hoax orchestrated by the Chinese government. And, of course, a lot of other people in his administration follow that same line of irrational thought, really in the face of the overwhelming evidence of scientific research that says quite to the contrary, climate change is very real and having a devastating effect in many parts of the world. But Donald Trump took pen in hand and signed some executive orders that dismantled many of the Obama-era climate and environmental regulations. And, Tim, as we begin here, maybe you could just summarize what exactly was it that Trump put in motion here in terms of repealing the previous administration's climate regulations?
Yeah, well, so I would say that Donald Trump, he hasn't quite repealed them yet, and it's still, it'll be a tough road for him to actually completely uproot most of President Obama's regulations, but he's going to do a good try. And basically what he's proposing to do is the centerpiece of President Obama's climate plan was something called the Clean Power Plan, which basically mandated that existing power plants and the electricity sector in general switch away from coal and other fossil fuels and move more towards renewables. And so this was a good first step. It wasn't adequate to the overall problem of climate change, but it was good in that it put in place kind of a framework for doing better in the future. And so President Trump, and together with his EPA Administrator Scott Pruitt, they put forth, you know, an executive order asking the EPA to figure out a plan for revoking that particular set of regulations. And there were a number of other things were kind of packaged together with this executive order, including removing a moratorium on coal mining on federally owned lands. It was also another key thing that President Obama had done. And so, you know, obviously if Trump is successful in doing this, it will be a severe blow to anybody who likes clean air and a stable climate. But the fight is not over yet.
And just to run down some of the other things I've been reading about, Trump is really trying to draw back fuel efficiency standards as well as freezing energy efficiency standards when it comes to things like appliances, like the Energy Star program that I think a lot of people look at when they decide to buy a refrigerator or an air conditioner, for instance. And I've also read about, and you can expand on any of these, Tim, but I've also read about the move that the Trump administration is making to revoke an Obama administration edict that oil and gas companies would need to measure their methane emissions from their oil and gas wells in sort of a preliminary step towards regulating the escaping methane, which is devastating in terms of climate change.
Yeah, no, each of those are extremely important. I mean, go first to the energy efficiency and the car fuel efficiency standards. I mean, these things are really win-win because they save people money. They save you money every time you fill up your gas tank. And they help push the auto industry in the direction of lower emissions, which is great for the climate and for the air. that we all breathe every day. And so revoking those standards or trying to find ways to weaken them or undo them when the past administration had actually signed a very strong agreement with the automakers is really, it's a giant step backwards. And again, it's one of those things that we'll have, the fight will continue and we'll see if he's actually eventually able to successfully revoke these regulations. But obviously it doesn't bode well. And I'm really glad you mentioned methane because this is one of those things that people talk about climate change. They think mostly about carbon dioxide. But methane, as probably not a lot of people know, is about 7 times more potent a greenhouse gas than carbon dioxide is. And, you know, a lot of times you hear, well, natural gas is great because it's replacing coal, and coal is much dirtier. Well, it depends on how much methane is escaping from where the natural gas is mined and from the pipeline where it's transported to market. And if there's even a medium-sized amount of leakage from that system, natural gas ends up being far dirtier than coal. And so it's sort of extending natural gas as a way of allegedly protecting the climate is a bad move. And what the Obama administration did was they tried to crack down on oil and gas companies and ask them to take certain steps to minimize the amount of leakage from their operations. And this, of course, was one of the very first things that Donald Trump and the Republican-controlled Congress targeted for rolling back. And in fact, if you look at a lot of what their first actions were, especially in Congress, you know, they've really gone after regulations that were inconveniences for the oil and gas industry, even though they were really good for the rest of the public.
Tim Donaghy is our guest, senior research specialist with Greenpeace USA. We're talking about the recent moves by the Trump administration, rolling back a lot of important climate and environmental regulations. Tim, when you look at what Donald Trump is doing here to eviscerate a lot of the regulations put in place during the Obama administration when it comes to the Clean Power Plan, fuel efficiency standards for automobiles, as well as other associated regulations, what is the long and short-term impact here if Trump succeeds in really gutting these regulations?
Yeah, I mean, that's a great question. And I think long-term, you know, President Trump, he's only president of the United States, and there is a clean energy revolution that is moving ahead without us and without him. He can't really stop that. The renewable costs of wind and solar are dropping dramatically. Costs of batteries are also dropping dramatically. And you're starting to see, you know, massive disruptions in the fossil fuel industry because of this extra competition that's coming online. And nothing President Trump can really do can really stop that transition. It's going to happen. I think the problem comes when you realize that time is actually quite short if we are going to try to make a good effort to really meet the goals that were laid out at the Paris Climate Agreement that said we're going to limit global warming worldwide to 2 degrees Celsius, and we're going to make a really good attempt at trying to limit it to 1.5 degrees Celsius. That was what the goals of all the countries of the world came together and said this is what we're going to shoot for. In order to actually hit those goals is going to require very rapid action and is going to need a very strong push from policymakers to make it happen. And so we're at the point where, you know, change in the long term is inevitable, but we need change in the short term. And it's, you know, waiting 4 years while Donald Trump is president is time that we really can afford to lose at this point for the planet and for the Paris Agreement.
Now, one of the rationales by Donald Trump and the Republicans in general to roll back these regulations is they say what they want to realize the full potential of the U.S. energy industry. And they also talk specifically, of course, about bringing back jobs in the coal industry, which has certainly, you know, hit some strong headwinds with the decreasing price of natural gas. They talk about regulations killing the coal industry, but a lot of the analysis that I've read talks really about natural gas as a competing energy source that's put coal out of business and not regulations. But, Tim, what is it that, what can you tell us about the credibility of the idea that this rollback of regulations is going to bring back American jobs?
Well, I think, you know, one of the fastest growing sectors for jobs in the energy industry is actually in renewables. It's actually in solar and it's in wind. And, you know, I think that a smart energy policy would really double down on that area, because that's where actually, if you make the investments there, you create more jobs than you do in the sort of the legacy fossil fuel industries, which are very, you know, they've been around for a long time. They've already kind of squeezed out most of the jobs there. But, you know, big investments in wind and solar actually can create really strong, well-paying jobs all across the country. And I think that that would be a really smart place to really be pushing for future energy growth. And I also do think that we need to do more for coal communities and for other communities who have been dependent on these energy industries that are declining, like the coal industry. And you're right, you know, it is mostly declining due to competition from natural gas, but I think the disruption in those communities is very real. And, you know, we need to put in place, and when I say put in place, we need to put money behind some of the rhetoric we have about job retraining so that those workers can find a new industry, and about reinvestment in those communities. And so I think, you know, in addition to sort of the climate policies that we're pushing for, we really want to put in place policies for a just transition so that those communities can actually, you know, regain the prosperity that everyone deserves. But again, I think, you know, the real job drivers, the drivers of job growth in the energy sector are really going to be renewables in the future.
Talking about renewables, when it comes to new technologies like photovoltaic cells, you know, people have the solar panels on their roofs to generate electricity and the like, and we have a lot more wind power coming online these days. I've heard that Trump wants to reduce or eliminate federal subsidies for those industries. What would the prospect be for continued growth of alternative energy sources like wind and solar if the feds were to withdraw the subsidies that are in place now?
Yeah, I mean, I think the evidence is pretty clear that the subsidies are an important factor when these companies make decisions about investments. And so if there's uncertainty or if the subsidies get revoked, you definitely do see a downturn in how much gets invested in those sectors, which is, you know, absolutely the wrong direction and a step backwards. But I also think if Trump and the Republicans were to go after those subsidies, it would be very unpopular, because one of the things that really does unite conservatives and liberals in this country is renewable energy, is that everybody likes renewable energy. It's very popular. Subsidies for renewable energy are very popular. And even people who don't necessarily believe in climate change are pretty happy to have sources of energy that pollute and that are, you know, the kind of the wave of the future. So I think it would be a foolish mistake on their part, but, you know, they've been making a lot of foolish mistakes lately, so we'll see what happens.
Tim, when it comes to environmental groups like yours, like Greenpeace and many others, and their opposition to what the Trump administration is doing with regards to rolling back a lot of these environmental and climate regulations, what is it that you can effectively do, given the fact that you've got the Republicans in control of both houses of Congress and the White House at this point? Is there any hope that through court challenges and the like, some of these things could be stopped or at least minimized?
Yeah, no, I think that there's a lot of ways that people can get involved. And I think at Greenpeace we always start with we need grassroots support from the movement of people. You know, it can't come from the top. It has to come up from the people who are affected by these changes, who are talking about how this impacts their everyday life. And so I think there's a lot of ways for folks to get involved. You know, they can come to our website and sign up, and we can get them plugged in, you know, a number of different things that we're doing. But even in the short term, you know, while the Republicans are in charge of Congress and Donald Trump is in the White House, there are a number of places where, you know, we can put pressure on fossil fuel companies. One place I think would be the banks. You know, every fossil fuel project in this country is financed by banks, you know, including some banks that you may have your checking account with or your mortgage with. As we saw last year with the Dakota Access Pipeline, the tremendous wave of protests protesting this terrible pipeline project, a lot of those activists targeted the banks because it was known which banks were funding for that pipeline. And that sort of pressure can be brought to bear no matter who's in the White House. We can sort of put the banks and the fossil fuel companies on notice that, you know, the age of fossil fuels is coming to an end, and it's a bad investment to invest in expensive infrastructure to extract oil and coal and natural gas that we can't afford to burn. And so I think that that message is growing stronger and stronger in the financial sector, and you're going to see that sort of activism come to the forefront. I would also say, I also point to, you know, the states obviously are a really fruitful ground for this sort of activism. For example, in New York and Massachusetts, the attorney generals have opened investigations into whether the oil and gas company ExxonMobil had lied to the public and to its shareholders about what it knew about climate change way back in the 1980s. And this is a really interesting evolving scandal because it turns out Exxon had had hired a number of world-class scientists to study climate change in the 80s. And then in the 1990s, they did this about face, and suddenly all their public messaging was about how climate change was uncertain and we shouldn't do anything rash like putting in place policies to reduce greenhouse gas emissions. So there's a number of attorney generals who are looking into whether or not that constituted fraud or whether any of their public statements were deceptive. And, you know, other attorney generals have also taken a look, and it would be great if there were more of these investigations that opened up, because that's a sort of another, you know, a lot of these states, there's other levers of power that can be used.
Tim Donaghy is our guest, senior research specialist with Greenpeace USA here on our Counterpoint program. Tim, I wanted to ask you about states like California, where they have for many years imposed stricter environmental regulations than the federal government. Jerry Brown, governor of California, the most populous state in the U.S., has vowed to resist wherever he can the rollback of regulations at the federal level from the Trump administration. What leverage does California have on the rest of the country to you know, at least maintain some of the Obama-era regulations that Trump is trying to roll back?
Yeah, well, I think California is a great example because it's really a counterexample to this idea that you can't protect the environment and have a strong economy at the same time. You know, in California, we're seeing this, you know, like you said, we have stronger emission standards and we have stronger environmental standards. And we also have, you know, a really growing solar sector here where it's creating a lot of jobs for people, you know, installing solar panels on people's houses. In terms of defending some of these standards, you know, obviously under the Clean Air Act, California has kind of special standing because they actually had strong environmental laws before the federal Clean Air Act was passed, and so they were kind of grandfathered in. One of the things that's been talked about is whether or not the Trump's EPA will revoke the waiver that they receive, California receives, to have stronger standards. And so far they haven't done that. So California is free to move ahead with certain regulations that will actually push ahead on things like the clean car fuel efficiency standards, even if the federal government is lagging behind. And Jerry Brown and the Attorney General of California have made public commitments that they're going to look for all the opportunities they can to really push ahead on this area. And so I think it's, you know, once again, it's a great place for people who are interested in this and looking to get active and if you are in California, to, you know, push for stronger standards in California. Because, you know, cars, if they have to meet a stronger standard in California, then it makes sense for the automakers to simply create one car and sell it all over the United States. So I think in that way, California can really take the lead, as they have done so many times in the past when it comes to environmental relations.
Tim, what's the future of the Paris Climate Agreement, given the Trump administration's position here as a, you know, climate change denying administration? Does the fact that the Trump administration is rolling back a lot of our regulations here, defying really the core of the Paris Climate Agreement, does that mean that the U.S. may be under some pressure from other governments around the world for what Trump is doing here?
Yeah, I think that's very likely. And in fact, I think if the Trump administration were to be pushed enough to officially pull out of the Paris Climate Agreement, there would be some diplomatic pushback from a lot of countries who have already admitted to these reductions. Reading the tea leaves from Washington, D.C., it seems that they're not going to formally pull out of the Paris Agreement, but they're, by gutting the Clean Power Plan, they're taking away the mechanism for meeting the goals that we had publicly agreed to. So it's in some sense, they're, you know, removing the enforcement of the Paris Agreement. And I think once again, you know, you're going to see other countries speaking out against this. You're going to see, you know, countries like China or places in Europe taking the lead when it comes to these policies and this technology, and possibly the United States falling further behind, which would be very unfortunate.
Well, just a last quick question here, Tim, and that is, many of our listeners are aware that April 29th, there's a march scheduled, a march for climate, jobs, and justice in Washington, D.C., and sister and brother marches all over the country in protest of the Trump climate, environmental, and other policies. What's Greenpeace's involvement in that march, and how important is it, you think, for people to turn out on that day?
I think it's hugely important for people to turn out. I mean, I think what we've seen since the Trump has been inaugurated is the tremendous outpouring of public protest. You know, the Women's March was possibly the largest protest in U.S. history, a tremendous outpouring of protest after the Muslim ban was handed down. And I think the evidence is that it works. Protest works. Getting out in the streets, it works, especially since we know that Donald Trump is going to be watching it on TV. It's the best way to talk to him. It's the best way to get in touch with him. Greenpeace, we will absolutely be there at the Climate March on April 29th. It would be great for anybody to come out and join us, or if you can't travel to D.C., find a local march and get out there and make some funny signs.
Right. I know there's a lot of local marches in cities large and small all across the country, including where we're broadcasting from here in Connecticut, and we'll be sure to get those details out to folks. Tim, in closing, leave our listeners with the web address for Greenpeace so they can follow a lot of the things that you're working on.
Yeah, thanks. Our web address is www.greenpeace.org. That's GREENPEACE.org. And if you go there, you can get connected with what we're doing in not just the U.S., but if you're from another country, you know, it will direct you to whatever country is closest to where you live. And you'll find out what actions you can take and what we're working on and where to get involved, because there's nothing we can do without people power.
All right, Tim. Thanks for your important work and for spending time with us tonight. Appreciate it.
Thanks very much. Take care.
Take care, Tim. Bye-bye. That was Tim Donaghy. He's a senior research specialist with Greenpeace USA.